Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprint, Don Nicolau. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Evident Footprints here on bbsradio.com. So nice to have you with us tonight on the 30th of November. That's right now on the Eastern time zone. That's what the date is. Some of you are still on the 29th, and I'll probably repeat this statement ad nauseum from here on out through the run of my show. We have a great guest with us tonight, and before I introduce him, I want to reiterate something that I spoke of on my inaugural show, my opening night, which was Monday or Tuesday morning, depending on your time zone. And I described in a kind of a convoluted fashion, because I was all over the place talking about the different things that I research and how I got into this and what my background is and what's going on. You know, it was kind of a stream of consciousness broadcast, but I did promise that we would bring researchers, we would bring truth seekers onto the show, and also I said that we are going to talk about some pretty nasty things from time to time, not with the intention of putting out the fear. We have enough of that through the mainstream media, what we call fear-mongering. And through government channels, we have the same thing. And through the secret societies and the corporations that they enlist to carry out their dirty deeds. And the general premise, at least my philosophy, is based upon we're going to change things and create a better situation out of a new paradigm that we create, then we need to at least understand what it is we're changing or what we're leaving. And the false history that we've been taught is definitely center and crucial to understanding the reality of the world and our true nature. And so we are going to, from show to show, bring experts in their field to share with you, the listeners, their personal experiences. And that said, we would hope that you would do your own research. You're going to hear things from time to time that are just mind-blowing, mind-shattering stuff, and we don't want to blow you out of the water on the first go-around. We want to open your minds, open your hearts, and let's say ignite that flame, maybe be the spark that ignites the flame of creativity so that you do discover yourself and you do eventually discover the truth. Now, our goal on this show is to bring you the truth, and the truth at any cost, really. The fear that some people have in exposing certain things that are really dangerous to expose is the reason why we don't always arrive at the whole truth. We get watercolored images, or we see sometimes it's referred to as rose-colored glasses. You know, we see the truth through rose-colored glasses, and we only see the good things, or we see the things that we choose to see, and we ignore the things that are important to help our fellow man break out of that that control system. So my personal belief, and that of many of my guests, is that we must discuss these things, we must examine them, but ultimately we will search for solutions. Tonight we are going to solicit some calls from the listening audience. You are going to want to talk with tonight's guest, I'm sure. He's got a lot of experience. So I want to give out the toll-free numbers first, and get a pen and paper or a pencil and write these down if you don't already have them. Area code 877-876-5227 in the USA only. In the USA and Canada, you can call toll-free 888 815-9756. Again, that's the USA and Canada. Or you can call us on our direct line, area code 530-876-3222. And with that, I'd like to bring tonight's special guest on board, an Evident Footprints, and he has a absolutely fantastic website. I discovered this website several years ago, and to my detriment, I failed to contact this gentleman up until maybe about 4 or 5 months ago. And actually, he contacted me first, and he had read something that I had published, and we struck up a conversation. And I see in this gentleman many qualities that I recognize in myself in terms of research, in terms of approach, in terms of spirituality, in terms of his interest, overall interest. I can talk to this man about things for hours and hours on end, as he's certainly written about himself, and we just never lose a topic to discuss. He is a wealth of information. I'm sure you're going to enjoy hearing from him. With that, and without further ado, welcome to the program tonight, Mr. Ken Adachi. Ken, how are you?
Great, Don. Thank you for your generous intro.
Well, it's just the truth. If it's generous, that's the nature of the truth. What can I say? This is your first appearance on my show. The last time I had you booked for a show, you had a total blowout of a tire on your car, and you were you were left in the jungles of the Southern California freeways. So
right, it happened on the freeway, and the first time I had a tire blowout, I think I mentioned that to you, since I was a much younger person, and all I could do was hobble off the freeway, you know, with the tire flat. And fortunately, about a block away, there was a gas station. I had hoped, I still had about 45 to 50 minutes to still make it home in time to do that show. So I had hoped, I said, well, if somebody's there, if I can, you know, pay him enough money, maybe he can just repair the tire for me quickly and I can make it. That's what I was hoping. But by the time I actually got there, he said, this tire can't be repaired. He said, you're going to have to replace it. And he said, if you leave the car tonight, I said, no, I've got to get back. So my next choice was to change to the spare in the trunk and still see if I can make it. But even that was a lot of fun, because that very day I had gone to a help a friend, and I picked up a lot of it, and I literally filled my trunk up. This is a small car to begin with. I filled up my trunk with this friend's stuff I was going to put in storage for him. So I had so much stuff in the trunk, it was unbelievable. Electronic gear, all kinds of stuff. I had to empty the whole trunk just to get at the tire and then to change the tire. I never took off. There's like a special cover plate. There's special rims on this car. Mamma mia. So it took me about 45 or 50 minutes just to change the tire. And by the time I got home, I was easily a half hour late. So it was... It was unexpected. I look forward to doing that show, but it was just one of those things.
Well, as the universe would have it, it worked out tonight, and you stayed away from a flat tire, and you made it to the show anyway. So we're thankful for that. I briefly just touched upon, you know, your research experience. I mean, you are really an author. I don't know if you consider yourself an author, journalist, but you are a very devoted and very thorough researcher. And, you know, I personally witness the amount of logic and brain power that goes into what you write, but I also sense a deep spiritual conviction to be fair. And I don't want to sound like the Fox News Network here, but fair and balanced, you know, but more so in terms of integrity, not the false claim that you're giving both sides a fair shake. You literally must be convinced of something, you know, before you dive into it and take a stand. I know that about you. Would you care to share how you got into setting up a research-based website that really deals with everything from the current news to ufology and aliens, mind control, orgone energy, and on and on.
Yes. It was a natural growth and expansion. It is not something that I had planned to do. I used to live on the East Coast. I had an entirely different life over there. And I wasn't involved in this sort of work at all. I had a few different businesses going, but I had an unexpected change of life in the early 90s, and I came here to California, and I needed to do something. I had to figure out a way to make a living. So what I had always been interested in on a private basis was alternative medicine. I paid quite a bit of attention to radio talk shows that, had hosts that Gary Null, for instance. I acquired quite a few books. I read quite a few books. I was interested in natural health techniques, therapies, in lieu of using drugs to solve, because I learned quite early. I learned by the mid-70s that the natural approach is much safer and it's much more efficacious than using drugs to try to fix health problems. Drugs almost always cover the symptoms. They smother the symptom, but they don't address the problem. And I found that out in the mid-70s, mainly from the books of Linus Pauling. He was promoting vitamin C at the time, and it really opened my eyes to the whole world of natural medicine. So when I came here, I just started to do a little personal nutritional consultation work just to get some money coming in, and I wrote some articles on different topics that when I had a client, I would, give them this material to read so they could, adjust their lifestyle more and improve their health. So I obtained my first computer in 1995. I bought a used computer at one of these auctions. It took me a few months to learn how to use it. Once I could do that, though, I started to use the word processor on the computer, which is a very nice way to compose. Prior to that, using a typewriter and it's a pain in the neck once you get accustomed to using a word processor. So that was a lot of fun. So I wrote more because I could use a word processor. It's easy to edit, erase and reinsert things. So I found myself writing more, and I think my first website went up in mid-1996. I had a preliminary website in which a friend of a relative of mine was the web host server. So I didn't have my own domain name. His name was in the front, and then, Educate Yourself followed that. And that one I had up until 1998. Then I got my own domain name in 1998. So in the interim, besides doing this private counseling, I put up the website, and I started to have people respond to me. They were sending email, asking questions. And the topic at that time was almost exclusively about natural health. But at the same time, I was hearing and reading, listening to things on the radio, and I was reading books that I wasn't exposed to on the East Coast. I didn't have time for that. I was too occupied with the work and business that I did, but I had much more time now, and I found out about the New World Order by reading Bill Cooper's book, Behold the Pale Horse. I think I read that around 1994, 1995, somewhere around there. That was a big eye-opener. Mm-hmm. Prior to that book, I was completely unaware of, what we call the New World Order, the agenda. I didn't have a clue. I was just typical average American. I didn't think much of politics or politicians by that stage in my life, because I knew they were, when I was younger, I was involved with both political parties, on the local level, and politics for the most part stinks. The people who run for office for the most part, shouldn't be a dog catcher. They're usually totally lacking in any sense of ethics or moral fiber, and they're just in it for personal gain, personal power, aggrandizement. They'll sell out their mother. So I you know, I ran into that for 15 or 20 years back in the East Coast, and I told myself, I'm not going to spend any more time in trying to, you know, save the local community because it's too corrupt. The local politics is just, the people who gravitate into politics are corrupt individuals for the most part. They're in it for personal gain. So I kind of gave up on, you know, interest in politics by the time I got to California. But once I began to understand the depth of the gravity, I should say, of the situation with the New World Order, I had to pay attention to that. So I read more and more and more. By somewhere around 95, 96, I was reading the books of David Icke, another big eye-opener. Almost the same time, I tripped across Dr. John Coleman's book, The Conspirator's Hierarchy. Mamma mia, what a book that is. Mm-hmm. So, once I realized how serious this is, I got a lot of books. Anthony Sutton, you know, sort of the main names in exposing the Illuminati, New World Order. When I met Ted Gunderson in 1997, he told me about William Carr's book, The Pawns in the Game. I got that one, and although that was written in the 1930s, very prophetic, very accurate. William Carr was an admiral with the Canadian Navy, very loyal North American, and he tried to warn Americans of what was coming down the pike. He saw it all very clearly, even back then, in the 30s. So that's how I added New World Order type articles to my website. Again, in the mid-90s, I became aware of, again, Bill Cooper's book, Behold the Pale Horse, goes into a great deal about the alien connection. There's, you know, the government, insiders, the so-called secret government, they're in cahoots with aliens, negative aliens, who don't have, you know, our best interest at heart. So that's how it happens for me. It was a website that was originally exclusively devoted to alternative natural health information. But because of exposure to these books, as I mentioned, talk shows, Art Bell, etc., suddenly this world of the New World Order and the aliens, it had to be something you had to look at. You couldn't ignore it. It was too big and important a topic to ignore. So my website, it started to include those chapters. I also came to be convinced, again, beginning in the mid-90s, that we were going to experience cataclysmic earth changes. I thought it was going to happen in 2003, and I became very much devoted to reading about that. And that did not happen, thank God. And I came to realize in time that I was snookered, that there are a number of individuals and organizations that are trying to convince the public that there is very earth-shattering impending doom just around the corner for us all. I call them the doom and gloomers. And while I bought into it in the 90s and even up into 2003, I don't buy into it anymore. I realize it's an operation. It's a psyops. It's controlled by the CIA, NSA. These are fear-mongering operations designed to produce anxiety, despair, hopelessness, panic. That's the end goal of doom and gloom predictors. The Armageddon crowd, you know?
Yeah, I think even passivity could be added to that. And that's both through the drinking water, those people that are still drinking tap water or consuming some form of tap water in the form of ice or whatever. And then you have, the pharmaceutical companies and their vaccine programs and the food companies modifying our food and, you know, companies like Monsanto out there that are hybridizing certain crops that are even, you know, you're hearing things now where they're crossbreeding animal DNA with plant DNA.
Yes.
You know, I mean, this is very dangerous. And
very.
Should we fear it, or should we be aware of it so that we stay away from it and seek another alternative? Now, you know, you brought up that point, and as you're describing how you sort of morphed into the state you're in now, my experience was very similar to yours. I came back home, we'll say, from having spent 10.5 years in California, thoroughly disgusted with the political situation there, back to the good old boy network, you know, on the hometown level, and I exposed a lot of corruption there, and then I realized that the corruption really had to be, you know, let's say, chopped off at the head, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And so I began to look at the bigger picture, which I had always been aware of. You know, I'd known about UFOs, you know, early on in my life, and I was not an abductee, but I had a special dispensation for being able to discern those things, and I still do. I've always honored it, and I've operated out of integrity with it, so my gift has been enhanced. And I've incorporated that into my research. In fact, often the research follows the intuition. You know.
Yes.
You can say, well, you get a certain insight and a certain deduction from the research that you do, but I do it in reverse. I see the whole picture laid out in front of me, and then I go find all the pieces of the puzzle, and I put the picture together so others can see it.
Yes, I'm amazed at what you and people like you can do. I mean, I can't do that, so I'm in awe of that. I mean, what a tool to have at your disposal when you're trying to do detective work. I mean, that's...
But I notice that you get the same results. You just go about it...
I certainly understand what intuition is. So, yeah, I get hunches. There's no doubt about it. I don't get any psychic impressions. I don't see any pictures, so I don't call myself a psychic, but I, of course, know we all have the capability to connect with our higher self, and of course, the higher self is your entry port into the superconscious mind. So, you know, or the universal mind, it's called, or the Akashic records. There's many words to describe it, but yeah, if your motivations are honorable, you're trying to do something in the interest of helping humanity, I think, A, that's part of the thing that allows information to come to you, because I don't obtain it myself as much as it's dropped in my lap. This is how it's been for a number of years. Either a book would fall off the shelf in the library or in the bookstore, open up to the very page that I, and that's happened on more than one occasion. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds weird, but it's happened.
Oh, no, I understand it, totally.
But, yeah, you understand. So you know what I'm talking about. So there are helpers in the spirit world who are assisting you. So the phone rings, an email comes in, a letter comes in, or you just happen to find this book among, you know, 500 or 600 books on the shelf. I just, let me grab that. We always have spirit help, you know, nudging us from behind the scenes. So I'm aware of that. So in that sense, yeah, I long ago realized that one is assisted, and I ask for assistance all the time. I no longer. Think it, when I find something that I'm looking for is accidental, I just put out a little mental request, please help me find this. Now, whether it's guardian angels helping me, spirit guides, I don't know, but somebody's helping me, because if I lose something and I put out a request, I usually find it within 1 minute. I can't lose things, really, although I do, you know, absentmindedly misplace things all the time. Just make a little mental note, would you please help me find this? Usually within 60 seconds, I've got it in my hand. That amazes me. And I had read that in a book many years ago, a book about communicating with your angels, because I attended some classes here in Anaheim at the Learning Light Center a number of years ago to try to, you know, increase psychic awareness and so forth. And I had read that, and there was classes about communicating with your spirit guides and all that. And I took a number of them, and I had heard that if you ask for help, you're going to get it. You just be open to it, and the more you communicate, you'll notice that the more the assistance you get. So you sort of open up this channel, and after a while, it's almost like a telephone. I mean, I don't hear anything back, but it's a one-way communication, but I'm confident they're hearing me on the other side. So, you know, naturally, this applies to anybody. It's not just me or just you. Anybody, we all have spirit guides. We all have helpers if you ask for it. I remind everyone, when I remind readers of my website frequently, because I often make some comments at the beginning of an article, little mini editorial opinions. And very often when this topic comes up, I'll remind readers, you have to ask. If you want to get help, you just can't hope you'll get it. No, you have to formally ask, because they're waiting for you to ask, because nothing is respected more in the spirit world than free will. And
Can I ask you a question now? Mm-hmm. And this is on the basis of your experience and what you're just describing. Mm-hmm. And this is something I personally, this is a personal conviction, and I've had this for some time, and it's part of my message, actually, and that's, you know, this control paradigm world that we live in, which is an ego-based control system based on illusion. In other words, they get us to buy into the false self or the ego, and they portray everything to us. They entice us with material possessions and appearance and issues of self-esteem or how we appear to others. So it's all a mental, physical thing, and to the detriment of our spiritual awareness, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, the thought patterns on the planet are basically either established on a foundation of lies, distortions, omissions, and omissions are, you know, I mean, there's such a thing as lying by omission, you know. History is a perfect example of that. Mm-hmm. When I came to that realization that, look, this is what they want us to believe, but none of this is true. If all these other things are illusions, then, you know, these situations, these cold wars and these so-called attacks, you know, terrorist attacks and what have you, or these covert plans to undermine our national sovereignty or destroy our economy and all this is happening really from within. And once you know that, you can discard the belief system. And that's, in essence, what I'm saying, is that we have to overcome the belief system, not by fighting it, but just realizing that we don't even need to employ it anymore. We don't need to pay attention to it other than to acknowledge when it's in operation. And that if we replace our assumptions, which are what we're really mind-fed, or, you know, what's spoon-fed to us through the mind control programs, and that includes our educational system and our religious institutions, then all we have to do is replace that empty void of the belief system with knowledge. What is your feeling about that? Do you think I'm barking up the wrong tree?
Or? Oh, no. I essentially was the average American in every sense of the word when I came here to California, before I was aware of the things that I just mentioned to you. I was average in every sense, in terms of I took my cues, like most people do, from television and from magazines and so forth. When I was younger, I was in the military. I was in Vietnam, and I was gung-ho military. In other words, I had zero objection to the military. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I didn't have a type of job in which I killed people. I don't think I would have wanted to do that. So when I went in, I picked a job that was interesting to me, but I wasn't in a position where I had to, you know, I wasn't in a combat position, and that was fine with me, because that's the way I wanted it. But I loved the adventure of being in foreign lands, and so I experienced all that, and the at the time, Lyndon Johnson was president, Dean Rusk was Secretary of State, Robert McNamara, Department of Defense. They said things that I thought was true. I thought we were there to prevent a communist takeover of Vietnam. I thought we were the good guys. I thought we were defending these, you know, the poor South Vietnamese from these nasty Viet Cong invaders who wanted to turn it into a godless, a totalitarian communist state. I thought the Gulf of Tonkin really happened. I heard Johnson on TV say it happened. You know, he got on TV, and this is what happened, and blah, blah, blah. So I believed everything when I was, you know, at that age and in the military. I believed what the government was saying. I had no reason to doubt it. I'd read Time magazine, Newsweek magazine. Those were the two news magazines that I read most of the time. I liked the information. It was well written, thorough analysis. I almost every week I read Newsweek and Time. So that's how I got my view of the world. And I believe what the editor said there. So I bought it all. And when I got out of the service, I came back home, as I said, for 15 or 20 years on a part-time basis. It wasn't my full-time occupation, but I tried to help locally on the political front, you know, to try to get better people elected locally. I never ran for office myself, but I tried to, you know, help the city that I lived in to improve. And then it's because of that exposure I came to realize just how rotten local politics is. And if local politics is that bad, I just have to presume state and federal politics are about as rotten. They just have more money to play with, but the same sort of players. You don't find very upstanding people in the political world. And after a number of years, I just sort of got fed up with these characters that get into public office. So I just gave up on them. You know, it took too much energy. It took too much time. And there was millions of them and only one or two, you know, good guys here and there to try to, you know, force some conscience on them. It just took too much time. So I just gave up. Now, I think I know the script because of the books that I've read and the people that I've, there's a script. This is not news to you, of course, but
yeah.
We're following an agenda. I knew the agenda before September 11, 2001. I fully expected some major event to occur in the country as a pretext for to set in you know a series of events to follow. So the minute I turned on TV about 15, just about 9 a.m. in the morning on September 11th. That's when I started to watch the news coverage. And I wasn't shocked. You know, I expected it. But this was the day. I mean, who wanted that day to come? I knew it would come. I expected it sometime from 2000 forward that we're going to have one of these big deal event, terrorist type deals. You know, had no idea what it was going to be, but there it was. The evening of September 11th, my website was growing, and I had already established a friendly relationship with Jeff Rentz, at least via email. He had posted a number of my articles by that point. So that very evening, I emailed him. It was maybe 2 in the morning. It was, you know, the early morning hours of September 12th, 2001. And I sent him an article, and he sent back a little reply to me. So he, too, was up late. He lives in Oregon. I'm here in California, so the time is close. So I said, okay, he's up late. So I sense it, you know, 9/11 just happened. I started to talk to him about it. And I said it was, you know, the buildings came down because of planned demolition. There's no other way they could come down. And Jeff didn't believe it. He said, no. He said the fuel exploded from the plane. It went into the hallways and down, you know, into the elevator shafts. And I said, no way, Jeff. You know, we're sending emails back and forth. I said, it can't possibly happen that way. There's no way a single plane could fly into a building that tall, that big, and bring it down. Now, I find people who haven't had much experience in life with making or building things, or involved in house construction or even mechanical work, some people don't have a mechanical aptitude and they can't visualize what's necessary for certain mechanical forces to create a change. So, you know, if you're involved in the building trade, yes, they have charts you can go to tell you what size joist you have to use and a certain square footage, there's a certain load and you know, for a bearing wall and these blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I learned all that when I was younger, but I just have an intuitive sense. You can just look at a structure and you know what sort of weight is going to be on the roof or on the second or the third floor, and in your mind you can sort of gauge the amount of structure that's required to support it. To me, it's easy. I just never had a problem visualizing things of a mechanical nature, and I started to repair engines when I was, from cars. I was rebuilding engines at 13, 14 years old. Mechanics is easy to me. It's nothing. It's just logic. It's just common sense. So I was telling Jeff, I says, it's just impossible. You can't get enough heat. You can't get enough kerosene, jet fuel. It just can't happen. I says, it was a controlled demolition. Well, so he didn't accept that. He says, no, I can't. The plane boy. Okay. The very next day, he did a radio interview with a man named Michael Glickman from England, who is a specialist in crop circles. And the first thing he said before he started the interview, they were talking about 9/11. And he said to Michael, what do you think of this theory some people have that the buildings came down because of, planted charges or because of, planned demolition. And Glickman scoffed at that. He thought, how ridiculous, how absurd for someone to even suggest that. And I put something along that line on my email, on my website. A few days later, I put up a little blurb alluding to my impression that it was definitely a demolition. The reason I'm telling you all this is that it was easy for me to I was not shocked when it happened. I was expecting something to happen because I already knew the script. And it's obviously it's an inside job if it's a planned demolition. Somebody set charges in that building, they use high-tech weaponry, et cetera. But the building was bought down through artificial means. It was a big operation. I already knew at that point that, we essentially have traitors on the wheels of power in this country.
Well, if I can interject something here to support what you're saying, and you may be aware of this or maybe not, but at least for the benefit of the listeners, to support what you're saying, there are many anomalies that are too numerous to consider this anything but a conspiracy. And we're not saying conspiracy theory here.
Yeah,
this is
correct.
Conspiracy. Marvin Bush was part of the company that had the security contract for the World Trade Center, and it expired on 9/11. Larry Silverstein bought a $324 million insurance policy that was to net him for double indemnity because there were two plane attacks, $7.2 billion. For a 99-year lease. Now, another anomaly is that the port authorities of both New York City and New Jersey claim during the investigation and the insurance issue when that came up that Silverstein was the rightful owner of the building. He was leasing. Why would he lease his own building from himself if he owned it?
Yeah.
The only reason might be some clandestine tax shelter or something. But his co-partner in the business, and he was the lessee he had all the concessions rights, and that was Frank Lowy from Australia, the second wealthiest man in Australia, the head of Westfield Properties, who's been buying malls all over the world. Recently, after 9/11, bought 8 malls from the former owner of the Cleveland Indians, Dick Jacobs, of the Jacobs crime family, who are partners in the sports service with the Bush family. They have 30-year contracts for all the professional sports arena concessions world or in the United States and in other countries. I mean, you know, the connections, as you start to examine these things, the connections just keep leading to the same people. Now, Silverstein would have had to pay really a lot of a fortune to get rid of the asbestos that was in the World Trade Center. So the best thing was to bring it down and take advantage of the situation and kill off some people. They actually turned it into a sacrificial, a satanic sacrifice.
Yeah.
And you and I have discussed that. We have photographic evidence that there are demonic manifestations.
Very plain to see once you run some of those photos through the filters that we've done already, and I know you're going to premiere that info somewhere down the line.
Very soon, yes.
People are going to be amazed at how clearly you can see these demonic figures. They're very, very clear.
They're apparitions, and, you know, they're not exclusive to the World Trade Center. They're also at the Pentagon. Now, you have the same anomalies at the Pentagon. You have a 16-foot-wide hole and a 40-some-foot, or, you know, what's the wingspan on a...
It's ridiculous. Of all the cover stories, the Pentagon is the most childish, the most absurd to try to peddle, but they don't attempt to change anything. Even the FBI's 19 Arab hijackers, none of whose name were on any of the flight manifest, they didn't retract any of that. I think it's either 11 or 12 of them are still alive.
Yeah, at first it was 7, and then the list grew to 9, and they located them in the Far East. One is actually legitimately flying for Tunisia Airlines and was going through a commercial license schooling, which is an upgrade to his already existing license. I mean, they just use these people's names.
Right.
Well, what about Building 7? You know, since we're on this subject, Building 7, to refute Jeff's argument or this gentleman from England, Building 7 was pulled. Larry Silverstein was videotaped making the statement. Well, you know, they said, well, there's been a great loss of life in this, and we think we're going
to
lose the building.
So we made the decision
building.
To pull. Right.
So they made the decision to pull. Pull it. Was the term he used.
That's
his
term.
Demolition talk for bring it down.
Yep.
How did that occur with no explosives and no plane hitting? Now, he didn't have the jet fuel on that one. Okay? So his argument just fizzled and evaporated into thin air.
Mm-hmm.
You see? But you don't get the logic. You don't get the connect-the-dot type of analysis there. And if I go with my gut feeling, it was an inside job.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? My intuition tells me it's an inside job. You had the dancing Israelis taking video pictures, you know.
Yes, that's right.
And what were the urban movers, they were called, and they were based out of New Jersey, and the FBI actually located these guys, and they were ordered sent back to Israel.
Correct.
I mean, tell me there wasn't a connection there.
Right.
Now, was it all Americans? No, I think there were some international elements, but there's a big difference between blaming this on Osama bin Laden, basically a camel jockey hiding in the mountains somewhere in Afghanistan,
mm-hmm.
and he's got a more sophisticated studio than the one they used to fake the moon landings. You know those videos where the lights come crashing down. I just throw that out there for the humor. So, you know, what we're saying, folks, here is we both conducted our own independent research, but we come up with the same conclusions, the same facts, do we not, in the end, when you put the pieces together?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and then we've got the story of Barbara Olson, whose husband, Ted Olson, was the Solicitor General.
That's
and she
that's
was
amazing.
Found in transit in Europe in 2004. If I remember correctly, it was October of 2004. She was arrested, according to an article on TomPlacco.com. She was arrested crossing into Poland. She was like in the border of Germany and Poland with a wig and a rather large amount of Italian lira, at least $1 million in Italian lira, and a Vatican passport.
Oh, my God.
Okay, now, do people just make these stories up just to, you know, put this disinformation out there? Tom doesn't strike me as that type of researcher. Tom has researched the Kennedy assassination. He's been looking at the Leo Wanta story. He was good friends with Sherman Skolnick, who had countless judges put behind bars for the corruption in the Chicago courts. Mm-hmm. You know, and these are classic researchers, classic writers. You know, and they tried to discredit these people left and right. So if you take what they print with a grain of salt, usually what they talk about comes, you know, in the end, it comes through the wash, you know, that they were telling the truth, that it was accurate information.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. What I think I like to focus on now is to try to inspire people. See, once you're aware of the agenda, once you do enough reading so that you understand that we can spend a lot of time just talking about individual, let's say, segments of the conspiracy to destroy America, because there are many, you know, facets being being put into place simultaneously to keep us off balance. They just don't focus their betrayal in one area. There's multiple things going on so that we're totally off-centered, and we're essentially running from one fire to the next to try to stem. So you can see what they're doing on the political front, this latest development in the thought crime bill, which the House passed a couple weeks ago, and now the Senate is going to be voting on it. If they pass that law and bill, and I'm afraid they will, then we're in serious jeopardy of not being able to continue to express ourselves freely. Free speech is really in danger. So I hope I know I've made it the top priority article on my website. We need a lot of Americans to call, fax, email, send in postcards to their senators and their the senators are who count now, and to absolutely tell them not to vote on Senate Bill 1959. There's a longer name for it.
Isn't it 1955?
I thought it was 1959. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I'm recalling from the posting that I did on it. But anyway, it's nicknamed the Thought Crime Bill. There's a longer name to it, which I can't recall off the top of my head. but that's a very serious loss of constitutional rights there. This is not a minor thing. We've had so far two major blows to the Constitution. First was the passage of Patriot 1 and 2. Those some provisions have been somewhat curbed and rolled back, thank God, due to lawsuits. However, it's still the entire Patriot Act needs to be repealed. The next thing that happened was October of last year, the Military's Commission Act, the elimination of habeas corpus. And essentially, a lot of people don't know what habeas corpus means, but essentially it means if the government's going to accuse you of the crime, they have to present evidence against you. They just can't stick you in jail and never charge you with anything. But that's what the Military Commission's Act did. It said for enemy combatants, the problem is that the president can decide whoever he wants is an enemy combatant, including American citizens. In Jose Padilla cases, the man is a U.S. citizen, and he was being treated like he's an enemy combatant. This is bad. But I would say the third major blow to constitutional freedoms is this bill. This is very serious stuff here, because now they can essentially prevent people from... I'm sorry?
I'm sorry. I thought you had concluded your statement. I was just asking, wouldn't you consider this type of legislation treasonous?
Oh, it's treasonous. I mean, it's anybody who supports a piece of legislation that is a direct refutation or a direct directly confronts any provision of the United States Constitution or the Bill of Rights is committing treason, because when they got elected to office, they put up their right hand and says, "I swear to uphold the Constitution." That's what everyone said. And when you break an oath in this country, you're supposed to be indicted. This is serious stuff. But we're accustomed to it now. The vast bulk of people in the U.S. Senate, in the House of Representatives, in the executive branch, are committing treason because they are ramming through bills which are whole or in part, in violation of the Constitution. That is the definition of treason. That's why I call them traitors. They are engaging in treason. This is not an overstatement. It's an accurate statement.
In essence, what this hate crime bill is targeted to do is to prevent those who are telling the truth from, speaking their truth.
Oh, yes, right. And it will affect many things. It will affect, first, demonstrations, because in this bill, they use a word called force. Now, of course, the wording of the bill was carefully crafted in such a way so that it's ambiguous to the point that the, quote, the enforcers can decide how they're going to interpret it. That's the best way to ram through poor legislation, is to make the wording murky and indeterminate, and that's exactly what they did. So they used the word force, that anyone who engages in a force that is contrary to this or that will be considered a terrorist, and that action a terrorist act. Well, you can call a demonstration a force. Therefore, they can effectively stop demonstrations. You can call comments made on an internet blog site in which someone says something sharp about somebody in the government, perhaps calls them a traitor, or perhaps says they got to be removed from office, we got to kick their butt out of office. That can be, in this Orwellian world that we now live in here, that can be interpreted as a threat of force. There is already a blogger, is he from Massachusetts, who's in jail now because of comments made on a blog. Now, we have something called, the First Amendment, freedom of speech. The guy should not be in jail. It doesn't matter, I don't know the specifics of what he said on the blog, but we have this Constitution that says it's okay to use, speech, with some exceptions. You can't yell fire in a theater, that type of thing. But just the expression of words, of dislike, etc., it's protected speech. The guy's in jail. Should not be there, but they're passing these unconstitutional hate crime bills to shut people up. And if you don't shut up, you're going to go to jail. We are paving a superhighway straight into a Nazi-style fascist police state. And this country is, just bolting forward on this. I mean, of course, the traitors are carrying us forward. It's not something that we, the people, are doing, but you notice how ineffective the electorate is in having any effect on politicians. Politicians have no fear of moving forward on with these treasonous acts because their loyalty is to the power structure who's pulling the strings. Certainly not to the
Ken, yep. I need to interrupt here. We're already run out of time, believe it or not. This time.
Yeah, and I thought we were just getting warmed up to get into the real heart of the matter.
I'm going to get you on again. Maybe next week we'll get you on and continue where we left off, if you'll agree to come back soon.
Yeah, I was a little bit afraid of this, and we just got so comfortable chatting about these preliminary ideas that the whole hour went by. Well,
that's okay. The next time we can dive right into a topic.
Okay, because I am looking forward to talking about solutions. I want to concentrate on telling listeners what they can do to stop the advancement of the New World Order, what they can do to increase their chances of economic and physical survival, et cetera, in the days to come. So
okay.
That's what I want to focus on.
We want to encourage everyone out there to go to the website. It's educate-yourself.org, just like it sounds. Educate with a dash between that and the word yourself.org. Our guest has been Ken Adachi. Thank you very much, Ken, for your insight and your wisdom and your spirit. And I'm going to have you back real soon. You've been listening to Evident Footprints. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and we're going to say goodnight, and we'll see you tomorrow night with our special guest, Jim Murray. In the meantime, peace, light, and love. And we'll see you. Good night.